You're listening to Speaking Up by WFSU Public Media. You may have noticed new billboards around town calling for the protection of Jewish people. What are the realities of anti-Semitism in Tallahassee? Gina Jordan is joined by Tristan Wood, who spoke with Arno Rosenfeld, a reporter at The Forward, to discuss the current state of anti-Semitism.
Have you seen the billboards opposing anti-Semitism around town?
Yes, I've seen a couple of them. I think there's what, four, right?
Yes.
They're bright. They have bold lettering. One says, being Jewish shouldn't require campus security. And one of the other ones says, you don't need to be a Jew to protect Jews.
Right. Those billboards were put up by a group called Jew Belong, in partnership with the Christian Broadcasting Network and Regent University, which is a private Christian university in Virginia founded by famous conservative televangelist Pat Robertson.
Yeah. So these went up in Tallahassee shortly after the infamous altercation on FSU's campus that was widely seen on social media.
For listeners that aren't familiar, this video went viral, showing FSU student Eden Deckerhoff yelling at a Jewish student who was wearing an Israel Defense Forces shirt. She was cursing and saying things like Free Palestine, and the video appears to show her shoving the guy's phone and making physical contact with him. So she was charged with a misdemeanor battery. Now, FSU put out a statement referring to this incident as anti-Semitic harassment. The statement said the university strongly condemns anti-Semitism in all forms and follows Florida law.
Right. So we should mention that Deckerhoff is scheduled to be arraigned in Leon County Court next week on that battery charge. And this video got the attention of members of the Trump administration. Now, Tristan, we have heard cries of what we saw in this video being an example of anti-Semitism. We've also heard, no, this isn't anti-Semitism. We've had people contact us to say that.
Yes. Ultimately, people have, you know, a lot of different views on this case and what it means around more of these national conversations around anti-Semitism.
Yeah. So the state has taken action to put this into law, specifically anti-Semitism. We're going to combat anti-Semitism, and here's what it means. Here's Governor Ron DeSantis speaking in May of last year at the University of Florida as students held a pro-Palestinian protest nearby.
We're going to maintain order in the state of Florida. You do not have a right to commandeer property. You don't have a right to go take over parts of the university. You don't have a right to go after other students based on their ethnicity. And we're going to ensure that that's upheld in the state of Florida.
So, Tristan, let's try to define anti-Semitism as best we can.
So, since the outbreak of the Israel-Hamas war, that question has garnered a lot of international attention and engendered a lot of international conversations, as well as here in Florida. The International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance has a working definition of anti-Semitism that was adopted into Florida law last year. The definition starts with this quote, "Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews, which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed towards Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, toward Jewish community institutions and religious facilities."
So that's a mouthful.
Yes. Another part of it discusses how anti-Semitism can involve certain sentiments against the state of Israel. But it says criticism of Israel, similar to what a person might levy against any other country, cannot be regarded as anti-Semitic.
So if we were to put this into some context here, let's talk about specific examples that were written into state law.
Yes, that definition has several listed examples, I believe over a dozen. Some of them are, quote, making dehumanizing or stereotypical allegations about Jews. Another involves accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing committed by a single Jewish person. Also, holding Jews collectively responsible for actions of the state of Israel.
Okay. This feels like a free speech issue. So how is this law being applied?
So essentially, anti-Semitic speech or being a motivator for a crime is a penalty enhancer. Someone can't be charged for being anti-Semitic. But under Florida law, if a crime is committed and there is a hate element, like anti-Semitism, or any other form of prejudice, like, you know, someone being prejudiced against someone for their race, religion, sexual orientation, then it would increase how that crime is classified criminally. a second-degree misdemeanor could be turned into a first-degree misdemeanor. A first-degree misdemeanor could be turned into a felony, et cetera.
Gotcha. Okay. So back to these billboards in Tallahassee. How do the groups that put up the billboards align with what they define as anti-Semitism?
So the interesting thing is that they have spent most of their efforts targeting that anti-Israel or anti-Zionist sentiment. The group Jubelong put out this sort of cheat sheet of information on their website. The sheet defines anti-Semitism as hate or hostility towards Jews and calls it racism. Then the sheet says that being a Zionist means you stand for a safe and secure Israel. To say a little bit more about Zionism, the Anti-Defamation League says Zionism is the movement for the self-determination and statehood of the Jewish people in their ancestral homeland, the land of Israel. And the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism includes, in its example, some expressions of anti-Zionism. Some of the examples include some forms of anti-Zionism like, quote, denying Jewish people their right to self-determination. Example, by claiming that the existence of the state of Israel is a racist endeavor.
Okay, so a lot to unpack there. Ultimately, there's been a lot of conversation about anti-Semitism being on the rise, and you've been looking into that. What have you found?
So, according to the Anti-Defamation League, in 2024, anti-Semitic incidents in the United States rose for the fourth consecutive year, reaching over 9,300 total incidents. That's the highest level ever recorded in the 45-year history of that organization in their, like, annual audit of anti-Semitic incidences. It's worth noting that after the October 7th Hamas attack, the League broadened its definition of anti-Semitic incidents to include more anti-Zionist sentiments like chants and slogans. Now, a separate report from Hillel International says anti-Semitic assaults and vandalism are down on campuses, but they have shifted to more online harassment, and those online sentiments have grown.
Gotcha. Well, you and I wanted to have this conversation because we were interested in understanding the national scope of people discussing rising anti-Semitism. You've done a lot of digging, and you actually talked to an expert on this.
Yes, I wanted to talk a little bit about to what extent anti-Israel or anti-Zionist sentiment is anti-Semitic, and kind of where the lines are drawn there, the common ways that people are arguing they should be drawn. So I spoke with Arno Rosenfeld. He's a reporter at The Forward, which is the largest Jewish newspaper in America. And he's also the writer of a biweekly newsletter called Anti-Semitism Decoded. I chatted with him recently on Zoom.
How does this FSU case match trends to what you're seeing as you're watching current national conversations about anti-Semitism on college campuses?
What really jumped out to me about the Eden Deckerhoff case was that it seemed like an instance of the federal government trying to insert itself into, you know, a relatively minor altercation on a college campus as part of its sort of crusade against campus anti-Semitism, or what it conceives to be campus anti-Semitism. So that's number one. I mean, what was notable about it. So that does follow previous trends, but it also suggests that the government is interested in or willing to shine a magnifying glass on anything that is brought to its attention along these lines on campuses around the country. That's one. And then two, you know, it was interesting to see the classification of this incident as anti-Semitic. And it's not exactly clear what definition or what standard the federal government was using to determine that this was anti-Semitic, or frankly, what standard FSU was using to determine that it was anti-Semitic. But I actually think that the lack of clarity around that question, what does the Trump administration think anti-Semitism is, that's a question that we've seen play out in a bunch of cases with stuff at Columbia and at other Ivy League schools. They haven't really clarified that. And this was an especially sort of glaring example of what happens when there is a lack of clarity.
Gotcha. So in this case, she went up to him and started yelling at him. Seemingly, she was expressing vocal anti-Zionist sentiment. Are there ongoing national conversations about to what level or how expressing anti-Zionist sentiments falls into the category of anti-Semitic and to what degree?
I think that there is this broader conversation and debate inside and outside the Jewish community over whether anti-Zionism is anti-Semitic. And anti-Zionism is basically this idea that there is no right to a Jewish state in Israel, and a bunch of different things can follow from that. So it might mean that, you know, at the most extreme, all the Jewish citizens of Israel should leave the region, go somewhere else. or that it should be a binational state where Palestinians and Jews have equal rights, could look like a whole lot of different things. But there's kind of an intellectual debate about that. Is saying that the Jewish people do not have a right to a Jewish homeland in Israel anti-Semitic? You know, are you saying that no people should have a nation state? You know, are you just opposed to ethno-nationalism? Are you singling out Israel, et cetera? So that's a conversation that's been going on for decades. What I think we're seeing in the FSU case is a almost more narrow conversation about whether it is anti-Semitic to essentially harass someone or treat someone poorly as a result of their relationship to Israel. And there's pretty broad consensus that, you know, we've seen stories out of Columbia University, for example, of a Jewish student in the dining hall who's wearing a yarmulke and someone comes up to him and says, F Israel. And, you know, whether that is even anti-Zionist sentiment, I don't know what the person who said that, what their position is on whether there should be a Jewish state in Israel. They're just saying they don't like Israel, but they're saying that to a Jewish student based solely on the fact that they saw that he was Jewish, right? That he was wearing something that marked him as Jewish. So if you're going to harass a Jewish student related to Israel, but you're just singling that because they're Jewish, that's not okay. The, you know, there's broad consensus on that. The more complicated question is what we saw at FSU. If someone is wearing a shirt that says, essentially, I support the Israeli military, and it's the middle of a contentious war, and you go up to that person, and you say the same thing, right? You say, F Israel. Are you harassing a Jewish student? Are you harassing them because they are Jewish? Or are you just expressing perhaps kind of crude political criticism? They're making a political statement with their shirt, or, you know, this could also be true if a Jewish student goes to a rally with an Israeli flag and someone says something to them, or, you know, a Jewish student who's the head of a pro-Israel club, somebody who has an actual position on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and you do something kind of negative to them as a result of that. Is that anti-Semitic? And, you know, similarly, in the instance of Columbia University, the anti-Semitism task force there tried to write their own definition of anti-Semitism that said it was anti-Semitic to discriminate against Jewish students based on their real or perceived ties to Israel. So again, we all sort of agree on the perceived issue. If you just see a Jewish person and you assume they have certain political views, that's anti-Semitic. But they were saying, no, even if you're correct about their political views, even if it's a person, you know, they didn't get into this, but in theory, even if it's a person wearing an IDF shirt, waving an Israeli flag, you know, someone who comes out and says, yes, I love the Israeli government, everything that they're doing, that's a real connection to Israel, you still can't discriminate against them on that basis. And I think the logic behind that is a little bit more confusing and complicated. It's one of the things I've written about in my newsletter at The Forward is, what does that mean, right? If you discriminate against, if you protest the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, because you don't like his policies, you could say, well, that's on the basis of his real connection to Israel. So is that anti-Semitic? But I think that's what's interesting about the FSU case, is it's not this broad thing about anti-Zionism, and it's not about harassing a Jewish student because you assume that they support Israel. It seemed like pretty clear cause and effect here. And then the question is, was what Eden Dekaroff did anti-Semitic? If so, why? And then how might that apply to all these other cases that I've referenced, or hypothetical cases?
The FSU Student Senate in 2020 approved the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism. The state of Florida adopted it as its definition of anti-Semitism in 2024. How does that definition address some of those questions about anti-Zionism versus anti-Semitism?
Yeah, so the IHRA or IHRA definition of anti-Semitism has received widespread adoption by governments and various institutions, and many Jewish organizations endorse it and support its use. As a practical matter, it is not clear what it says about Israel. The definition itself is not that controversial, but it includes these examples, nearly a dozen examples of what the definition's language says may or may not be instances of anti-Semitism. So even the definition itself says that these things are not necessarily anti-Semitic, but that list includes things like denying the Jewish people the right to self-determination in Israel, which you could interpret to mean anti-Zionism. Now, in theory, again, if you look at the definition, it's not saying that definitely is anti-Semitic, but it's saying it might be anti-Semitic. Now, the reason why many, not just anti-Zionists, but other kind of progressive critics of Israel, including many Jewish ones, don't like the definition is because they say that if you look at those examples, the examples of things that may or may not be anti-Semitic, that also includes denying the Holocaust, right? And it's hard to imagine a scenario where denying the Holocaust is not anti-Semitic. And so they say, you know, yeah, it says these things may or may not be, but it's pretty clear that it means this whole list, everything on it is anti-Semitic. And in practice, you know, its proponents say that it's an important definition because it captures this sort of animus toward Israel that can often express itself as anti-Semitism, but it's a little bit hard to explain to a layperson. So, for example, one of the cases that is used as an example of why this definition is important is there was a case in Europe where somebody threw a Molotov cocktail at a synagogue, and the police determined that it was not a hate crime because he threw the Molotov cocktail at the synagogue because he was mad at Israel. So even though the synagogue didn't have anything to do with what was going on in Israel, they determined that it was a political crime as opposed to, you know, an anti-Semitic or an anti-Jewish one. And so the definition is meant to explain, like, look, if you're angry at Israel and you take it out on Jews, that crosses a line, but the language is just not that precise. And so it ends up effectively being used to classify a lot of criticism of Israel as anti-Semitic. And that's basically where the lines break down. So if you think that anti-Zionism is almost always or always anti-Semitic, you're likely to support the definition. And if you disagree with that and you're concerned that anti-Semitism is being used as a inappropriate kind of excuse to shut down criticism of Israel, you generally oppose the IHRA definition.
Zooming out from this specific FSU case, there seems to be from the data that, you know, is widely published and talked about a national rise in anti-Semitism. From your work, where is that growth coming from on college campuses?
You know, it's a complicated question to answer because it's not clear that the rise in anti-Semitism is directly pegged to what's happening on college campuses. There's sort of the rise in anti-Semitism is taking place in a lot of different places in a lot of different ways. And then you layer on top of that the fact that people don't even really agree what anti-Semitism is or what it looks like. The most recent data from Hillel found that in person, like real life instances of anti-Semitism have been down in recent months, but that online harassment is up. So that's people seeing anti-Semitic content in their feeds or somebody sending a harassing message to them. A lot of this is pegged to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the ongoing war in Gaza. We know sort of throughout history when there is a violent, you know, outbreak of violence in Israel or Gaza or the West Bank, that results in increased anti-Semitism and often also increased Islamophobia in the diaspora, so in the United States, in Europe, elsewhere. So a lot of it is pegged to the conflict. And a lot of that, you know, when we think about it in the media, what we often see are, you know, the pro-Palestinian protests and anti-Semitism related to those demonstrations. But we're also seeing right-wing anti-Semitism. When they've done studies on college campuses since October 7th, we've seen that, you know, far right-wing students, students who identify as very conservative or alt-right, those sort of things, express more anti-Jewish animus than, you know, far left students who might be associated with the pro-Palestinian demonstrations. So that's an interesting wrinkle. At the same time, many Jewish students feel alienated and discriminated against by people who are active in pro-Palestinian circles, even if those people don't intend to discriminate against Jews and don't hold, you know, if you ask them, they don't have negative views about Jews, but the way that they're expressing their politics related to Israel and the Palestinian conflict come out in a way that many Jewish students find uncomfortable. Of course, at the same time, there are many Jewish students that are active in those movements. So it's a big mishmash of things. And I think that, you know, we're seeing a relatively narrow segment of what's going on in the media pegged just to the protests. And the Trump administration's approach has been basically pegged exclusively to what they believe is anti-Semitism, related to criticism of Israel, and it's not examining, other instances of anti-Semitism that we've seen on campus, including far-right anti-Semitism. There have been a couple of cases, I believe, in the state of Florida, one at the University of Florida's law school related to a student who was posting anti-Semitic content on social media. There's also been some far-right groups tabling on college campuses. I don't know whether they're students or off-campus folks, but we're seeing a fairly broad spectrum of anti-Semitism on and off campus. That's a bit more complex and varied, I would say, than what you might see sort of in the headlines or what you see the federal government trying to address.
In media conversations around anti-Semitism on college campuses, what do you think are a couple things that you think often gets misconstrued or people don't understand?
So I think the biggest misunderstanding is that what Jewish students on college campuses report the biggest problem with is what I call social alienation. So, this is feeling like you are not welcome in various campus spaces because of your peers' views on Israel and how that sort of interfaces with your Jewish identity. So many American Jews have a sort of passive affinity for Israel or connection to Israel because it's really ingrained in various elements of the Jewish community. People go on trips to Israel. If you go to synagogue or a Jewish day school, you celebrate Israeli Independence Day. So even if you don't have strong feelings about the conflict, you have some sort of association or affiliation with Israel in many cases. And so if suddenly you see that people in your, math class or whatever it may be are posting on Instagram stuff about how Israel's committing genocide and anyone who's a Zionist is, a bloodthirsty baby killer, you feel it can make you feel really bad and alienated. And similarly, we've heard stories about people in their fraternity or sorority who feel like there's no support, following October 7th, the terrorist attack, no one reached out to them, but then immediately they were ready to condemn Israel when it responded. And I think what's important to understand about that is that it's really hard for schools to enforce that. I mean, people look at the tent encampments, for example, because that's a very tangible example of what's going on. And similarly, at FSU, they see this video of like, oh my goodness, look, people are cussing out Jewish students on college campuses. And those are things that, in theory, universities can address directly, right? You can ban tent encampments or you can arrest students for, accosting other students. But you can't really make people change their politics on Israel. At least that's not something you can put in the student code of conduct. It's not something that the Department of Justice can address. And so when students are expressing this deep level of discomfort, it's often coming from the fact that their peers, they might just be posting on their Instagram stories, right? It's not even something that is physically sort of happening on campus, but people know that, oh, this person I thought that I was friends with apparently thinks I'm, complicit in genocide. And that's really painful. But it's hard for schools or the government to address, largely because it's not illegal. It's just what people think and feel.
That was Arno Rosenfeld, a reporter at The Forward, the largest Jewish newspaper in America.
Tristan, thank you very much for your reporting on this.
No problem, Gina.